Armchair Champions.
We are the best at sitting in a comfy chair and telling the entire sports world what they should have done and what they should be doing later. Putting it simply, champions, we are the... Okay, that's enough of that. Nobody wants to hear me sing. Welcome, everybody, to Armchair Champions. We're a little late this week. We've had some things going on and crazy stuff, but we are here, and so, like I said, you'll be hearing this a bit late, although it should be going up later the same day. Normally, it comes the day after we record, but anyway, enough business. I hate business. So, I'm here with Evan.
Yes.
Yeah, he's back.
I am back. I'm the latest in the revolving door of broadcast orphans to come to your show.
Yeah, I know.
So you've graciously opened your doors to us wayward sports people.
So far you're my favorite. So, although we've done more recordings together than I've done with really anybody, perhaps probably, besides Ethan. Ethan's the only one who rivals you, but you've been the latest. But how was your weekend? Did you really enjoy it?
It was good. Just relaxing, getting a little bit of homework done. And that rest of the week's been pretty good too. But
isn't really time for a weekend recap. It's more like the how's your week so far been?
It's pretty good. School's busy, but other than that, nothing much.
Yeah, so I've had a pretty crazy week. I've had a lot of stuff. I write for the Statesman, so I've had some deadlines and things like that. Oh. And I write for the hockey team. I cover the hockey team, so go check that out. It's really awesome stuff. If you like hockey, this is the first time they've really had a hockey beat writer in a little bit.
Well, that's like two straight editions of the Statesman,
I think, as well.
So
yeah, the Monday and today.
It's a steady stream of hockey news. I'm loving it.
Yeah, so. I am the face of the Statesman. That bullcrap. I'm not.
At least the hockey desk at the Statesman. The little desk they've got tucked away in the corner of the office.
They're getting ready to make my own little personal space. It's reserved for Jason. All right, so we're going to go into Utah State football straight up, and then we're going to get more into Utah State football. We're going to do a lot of Aggie stuff today, and then we're going to get into some NFL, and that's basically it. We're going to do football all day.
Tis the season.
Yes, tis the season. Until that glorious season when we can literally cover every sport out there.
It's almost here, though. It's almost. Almost there.
It's my favorite time of year. It just is. All right, so as we all know, Utah State lost to Air Force. That's long since been news. And what were your impressions from the game? What did you take away from that game?
I mean, it was a one-score difference, which I kind of expected from these two teams. But first, though, this isn't necessarily due with the outcome of the game, but their Air Force's quarterback, this Nate Romine. Well, excuse me, Mr. Nate. But only five completions out of 13. I don't know. I don't know what they've got going on.
Well,
it's
their style of play, and we talked a lot about this in the pregame. Air Force, and you see this with Navy as well. I'm not familiar with Army, but I get the feeling they do it too. They run the ball 1,000 times a game. They don't have a passing game.
Okay.
A pass is essentially a trick play for them, or a small step above a trick play. And so you'll see them, they were averaging 400 yards a game coming into the Utah State game, albeit two cupcake teams. They was who they played against, and so that's why they had so many. But their a normal team's passing total, that's Air Force's running total usually.
Interesting. Oh, that just brings up his total completions to 13?
Yeah,
on the year.
He had 13 attempts, and now like I said, he's
probably I think I could be the Air Force quarterback.
You probably could.
If all I have to do is make a few completions a game, but. Anyway, I'm a little concerned about Devontae Mays also coming out with an injury.
That really worried me. He came.
That was early. from that was early, right?
Yeah, that was his first play. He was Tony Lindsay Jr. was starting the game, and then Devontae Mays come in, and I was actually surprised because I was thinking he was out because he wasn't starting. Then it comes out and it's like, hey, it's Devontae Mays. Goes in, dives.
Yeah.
It looked like he almost might have hurt his neck, but I think it was his leg.
Yeah, that to me is a little concerning just because I think he has so much potential just from the – when he has a breakout game, I mean, he really has a game. So I'd say those are probably – that's probably my biggest concern out of this. Maybe one last takeaway for me is that this may probably, in my opinion, puts us out of contention for a conference title this year.
Yeah, I would say so a lot. This was a really disappointing game in that this is the game we were going to find out what Utah State was made of. And unfortunately, for a number of reasons, Utah State showed that they aren't quite – in contending. And it was a long shot anyway with teams like San Diego State and Boise State. But unfortunately, Utah State isn't where they want to be. And so some of the takeaways I had from this game. First off, I'll talk about some of the bad things, then I'll talk about some of the good things because I always like ending with good news because I feel good about myself. This is an observation that I made in the pregame show, and I believe I made it in our last show. Utah State is really struggling to run the ball inside. And I've said inside the tackles, and really it's inside the guards, the A and B gap on either side of the center. Because actually a couple of Tony Lindsay's better runs were when he cut just inside the tackle on a little wham style play. And other than that, Tony Lindsay had a couple good runs, but whenever they ran up the middle, whenever they ran, period. Utah State's running backs, so this is excluding Kent Myers, 19 carries for 46 yards. Ridiculously bad. And Kent Myers, I think his total was... I forget. He had negative 1 yards, but they count sacks in the rushing total, which I think is ridiculous. And it's, frankly, a little stupid. Because it really shouldn't count against the rushing total, because otherwise Kent Myers would have had actually some nice production running the ball, because he had some nice runs, although one of them was called back.
Well, he did get that... I was reading something wrong, but yeah, he did have some pretty decent.
Yeah, and so he's a good runner, but Utah State in this game, they couldn't run the ball at all. Against Arkansas State, they got away with it. Tony Lindsay had 98 yards and a pair of touchdowns, and Kent Myers was running the ball pretty good too. But in this game, nothing. Now, this, I think, points a lot more towards the interior offensive line than it does the running backs. Because Utah State's got some good running backs. And now Devontae Mays.
But if no one's making the hole for them to go through. I mean,
yeah, it doesn't matter who you are. If you have two guys, Tony Lindsay was getting hit behind the line. It wasn't like he wasn't finding holes. There were no holes there.
Yeah.
You get hit behind the line, you have to be Barry Sanders and more to get out of there to get any sort of decent gain. And even as good as Barry Sanders was, he had the most negative rushing attempts where he had tackled for minus 1, 2, 3 yards. But he was so good that he averaged more than 5 yards a carry because he's Barry Sanders. And Barry Sanders doesn't play for Utah State, so we've got a problem. Now, on the other side, I finally saw what I've been wanting to see all year from Utah State's offense. Kent Myers actually throwing the ball. And I was just watching the game. I was thinking, finally, because I watched.
Options now. It's like.
Yeah, I watched the Weber State game. I didn't really get to catch a whole lot of the USC game, but I don't think there was much there anyway. I watched the Arkansas State game. Kent Myers, he would throw a handful of passes. They were easy passes, nothing. He had a couple of scripted deep throws. But in the Air Force game, he was making throws on slants. The biggest area I was looking for was middle, 8 to 10 yards down the field, maybe 8 to 15 yards, get a little lengthy there. But he was making those throws, and he looked accurate. He was placing the ball. He was 29 of 47, so he had a good overall completion percentage. It was well over 50%. And do the math real quick. What's 29 divided by 47? However much that is. Doing the math, is 61%.
Yeah.
So a good percentage. He had 360 yards, a touchdown, And an interception, that one interception was just an overthrow, which I thought was debatably a pass interference because a wide receiver got held up, though it would have been a soft PI call.
But obviously something is not clicking, though, because, I mean, if we only led for one quarter out of that whole game.
And then four as efficient as they were passing the ball, 360 yards. They scored essentially 13 points through the game, and they ended up with a token touchdown at the end of the game to narrow it to 7. So they weren't able to finish drives. They had a couple of red zone drives that stalled. One, they did a fake field goal, and they didn't get it. And so there were a lot of missed opportunities. And then that last drive, the Utah State was down, I believe they were down 14-17. No, 13-17. I can't remember all the exact. But they were down, and they were getting ready to drive the ball, and they had two formation penalties, essentially. There was one illegal man downfield, but it was because he lined up wrong. And they had another one that was just straight-up illegal formation. Both those plays called back 10-plus yard gains that got first downs, and then after that they didn't get the first down. They had to punt the ball. Oh, no, they fumbled the ball, actually, was what happened. As they got a turnover, Air Force scored, and that's when you had the feeling that the game was over.
Well, also that, I mean, for Air Force to not have any turnovers, though, I think obviously didn't help us because we didn't get any opportunities like they would have gotten after two. So
another positive. We're going to go with another positive. Utah State's front seven. I was pretty impressed. Actually, I should just say the defensive linemen. I wasn't as impressed with the linebackers. Whenever Air Force ran in the middle, 2-3 yard gains, maybe four. They broke a couple, but that happens when you run the ball so much. It was when they ran the ball outside. They did a pitch. They ran an option. That's when Air Force was getting more yards. And that falls more on the linebackers, maybe the defensive ends, but more on the linebackers, safeties, corners, because they weren't able to get to the running back, and the running back would turn the corner and get 10 yards. And so... Yeah. I guess that's a positive and negative. Yeah. Defensive linemen played great. Linebackers and secondary, not so much.
Well, I mean, I think another positive, though, third down efficiency. USU was about 50-50 on third down. I think Air Force was like a third. It's about 33-ish percent. So,
which makes it more mysterious why Utah State couldn't win this game. Yeah, it felt like they were better.
More yards.
Yeah.
Better efficiency at third down. But I don't know.
Utah State just made one too many mistakes, and a lot of people did not like the job the referees were doing.
I've heard that, but obviously I wasn't at the game, so I didn't see it. I mean,
And I was at the game, but in all honesty, when you're at the game, you don't know what the calls are. They show the replay once on the board if you're lucky. They're actually better this game because they showed us two or three replays. But you have to, if you want the best view on what a call is, you got to be watching it on TV, or if you can find a replay after the game, which I haven't gone and done. And from what I saw, of course, I didn't really see anything in the replays. I'd have had to go back and look. But what I saw, I could have seen the plays going either way. But again, I haven't gotten really good looks at it, and so there's a lot of people who are mad, and perhaps deservedly so. But either way, you can't blame a game on the refs. Yeah. And Utah State, they lost this game because Air Force beat them. It wasn't some deal by the refs.
Yeah.
And it never is.
I mean, you had roughly equal yards per pass as well.
Yeah.
And so
that's one thing with the Utah State secondary. They gave up 2 40-plus yard pass plays, and they let the random tight end on Air Force get wide open for a touchdown pass. And so,
so that takes care of, what, 3 out of the 5 completions? Yeah. Which is pretty fantastic if you only get five. You've got 5 shots tonight, Nate.
Yeah, like I said, they're practically trick plays.
Yeah.
But anyway, another storyline that's coming out after this Air Force game, there are a number of people that are asking for Matt Wells' head. They're wanting him to get fired.
Put up on the wall above the fireplace.
Yeah, let's do that. Mount him. So do not like the culture of sports where the second something goes wrong, off with the coach's head, or something like that.
Because it's like, we're not the Yankees, you know, we're not run by George Steinbrenner. I mean, you're not just going to fire people. We don't have, like, who would, I don't know. It's like firing somebody, you should have somebody to fill his place, but
yeah, and something
I don't think we're that good of, like, a spot yet for coaches to bend over backwards just to get here, so.
Yeah, and along with that, I don't think there's any reason to fire Matt Wells yet, I guess. You know, most coaches end their tenure by getting fired unless you are so good that you can just retire.
Or you move on.
Or you move on a la Gary Anderson, Urban Meyer, whoever else moves around. And so my answer to this, should Matt Wells be fired? The shorter answer is no. He should not be fired. The long answer is let's wait and see. So I've been waiting for this period of time, ever since Gary Anderson left and I knew Matt Wells was going to replace him. Mm-hmm. I thought, okay, Matt Wells is going to ride Gary Anderson's success for a couple of seasons. It's Gary Anderson's recruits. Well, it's his guys. The system is going to change up a little bit because, you know, head coaches have different styles. But I figured it's going to be 2, maybe 3 years. In this case, I think it was just 2 years where Matt Wells is just going to ride that success. But then we get those 2 or 3 years down the road. Matt Wells is now in his fourth year. This is his freshman that he first recruited that first year as a head coach. They're now seniors barring red shirt and injury red shirt and stuff like that. Most of them are seniors with a few exceptions. So now these are Matt Wells' guys. Most of the guys from the Gary Anderson era are gone. Not all, but most. This is now where we see the value in Matt Wells. Can he build a program? Because as a college coach, you're almost like a general manager and a coach, kind of like what Bill Belichick is in the NFL. Mm-hmm. It's that where you're going at recruiting, you're building your program, choosing the players that you want, recruiting them.
And which then, is like having two jobs, like yeah. Two full-time jobs.
Yeah, and obviously you have help with the entire coaching staff recruiting, yeah. But it is obviously his decision ultimately, and he's picking the guys and saying, okay, I want this type of player for my type of system. And so really, I want to wait and see, okay, now we've seen he went 6-7 last year, and now he's 2-2 this year. You know, right now it feels like we'd be lucky to get back to 6-7. Or, you know, if we even get bowl eligible. But I think we can. Well, this is where we got to wait and see. We've seen that Matt Wells can coach talent. He's got a 27-18 record, 2 9-plus win seasons, 3 bowl appearances, 2 bowl wins. We know that Matt Wells can coach if he's got talent. The question is, can he pull that talent in? And this is where we're going to see this over the next couple of years, assuming he lasts that long, and I think he will. But we're going to see how good is Matt Wells as a recruiter and as a program builder.
Yeah, and I would say, like, on the fan side, like, if you're where I am in school, like, because I first came to USU in 2012 when they went 10-2, and, you know, it was a real exciting. I mean, you know, it was the whack, but it was also real exciting because it's, you know, our team getting double-digit single-season wins. Regular season wins. I would say, though, in Matt Wells' defense, I mean, yeah, this is partially a reflection on all that he's done, but also to lose pretty much almost your entire coaching staff, mm-hmm. I think that plays a lot because it's not like those guys are just parroting what he does. I mean, they've got their own coaching philosophies too. And so I would say I think maybe they could have tried better to keep a lot of the assistant coaches and the coordinators because I don't think it's a one-man job building that team.
Oh, yeah, it never is.
Yeah. And so, I mean, and like you said earlier, I mean, we've been to the bowl games. It'd be nice to kind of move up. I think that's where the frustration is moving up to getting better bowl games, a little bit more recognition, and hopefully they'll do that over maybe the next few years. But I just don't know how much he could have controlled like the way the coaching staff got shooken up.
So. Yeah, and that's one thing, and I was actually going to bring that up, is that he lost six coaches this offseason, three of them to Power 5 conference teams. And you said you'd like to see a better chance to get them to stay here. And you can't always do that. It's an unfortunate thing we couldn't keep Gary Anderson around.
Because it's the better offers elsewhere. Yeah. And that's just the business side.
And you think of how much these coaches, these, you know, I'm suddenly spacing on the words, the coordinators, positional coaches. One example, and I feel like I always go back to the NFL, and especially the New England Patriots, but they brought their offensive line coach back, and I can't pronounce his name. His nickname is Scar, because that's kind of what his name starts with. But they brought him back. Last year, the New England Patriots offensive line was atrocious. This year, they're leading the league in rushing. Yeah. And you think that's all because one elite offensive line coach comes back, helps flip the system back to what it should be, and suddenly you have almost the same group of guys, with a few exceptions. It's not like they brought in five Hall of Fame linemen and started dominating. It's system, it's coaching, it's training. There's people who will underestimate how much effect a coach can have, especially if they're under the radar. And that's one reason why I don't think Matt Wells should be fired yet. One of those reasons is he just lost a lot of his guys.
Well, yeah, and plus, as you mentioned, at least a few of them, two Power 5 conference teams. So they got, everyone was seeing what they were doing.
Yeah, and they're good coaches.
Yeah, and that's the problem. And so, yeah, so I think that would be the biggest reason why he shouldn't get fired. I know we're in agreement on this, but I don't know. I just don't know how much is totally in his control at a certain point.
And really the frustration that you see from the fans, and so I guess I can kind of do devil's advocate, is a lot of people really frustrated with some of the play calls. And a lot of my concern about that was waylaid after watching the last game. People kept saying, he's throwing too many bubble screens. And I agree. I think the bubble screen is the dumbest play in the history of the league. Or college football. I don't know if I've ever seen a bubble screen go for more than 4 yards. But I didn't see very many bubble screens against Air Force. In fact, I can only remember maybe one or two. And one of those got a first down. So, in my face, apparently. Or in everybody's faces, I guess. Because it sort of worked. It was only like a 3 yards to go situation, but still.
But working once out of so many times, probably.
Yeah, and again, you might get lucky on one play, and that's when the defender makes a bad tackle. But I was more encouraged by the play calling against Air Force. And they knew what was working. They knew the pass was working. They were trying to get back in the running game because you can't completely abandon it. And they did get some good gains, and they were trying to establish the run, but they couldn't. So I liked the play calling against Air Force. You can debate the fake field goal. I thought it showed guts. I always like those. No, it didn't work. That sucks. If he makes it, he's called a genius. If he doesn't make it, some say he should get fired. It's that.
Yeah.
It's that situation. And so, really, I feel like the arguments for Matt Wells being fired are too soft at this point. He's not showing any indications or any weaknesses that show he should be fired, such as play calling, inability to coach players, inability to recruit players. I think right now, perhaps it's just a run of bad luck.
Yeah.
A number of different things. But
you also look at the schedule and you look at the losses that we have had. I mean, obviously, this last one was against Air Force, which is a team that is contending for a conference title. And then another one was USC, you know. So it's not like they're losing to teams that they should just blow out of the water. I mean,
yeah.
The games that they have lost, it has been to teams that are competitive.
Yeah.
So I think if he had lost again to Arkansas State, I'd be a little bit more worried.
Yeah.
But the fact that, you know, it's teams that aren't garbage, you know, so.
Yeah. So that's that. Now, we're going to move on from Matt Wells, because if we keep going, we're basically going to be beating a dead horse. So, the New England Patriots, I've said that way too many times. this podcast already. And I promise
we're going to have like a counter.
Yeah, a counter.
When I'm back next week, we're going to have a big board, like a scoreboard here.
How many times does Jason say the New England Patriots, the freaking homer?
Ding! Little bell every time.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm such a homer. But, I'm going off a rant. I'm going on a rant today. And because I just love to go on rants about the Patriots. Ding!
Ding.
I stole your thunder. So, in light of the New England Patriots' win over the Houston Texans, they blew them out of the water 27-0, and it was so much fun for me to watch that game. Because you always love those blowouts. But a lot of people, they've now seen the Patriots go 3-0. They've started two different quarterbacks. And mind you, when Tom Brady comes back and starts, assuming something doesn't go disastrously wrong, this will be the first time in the history the Patriots have started. It'll be the first time since like the 80s or 90s that the Patriots have started three quarterbacks in a season. Fun fact. But because of this 3-0 start, there's some people that are saying Tom Brady is a system quarterback or a product of the system. There's people who will say Tom Brady has only won 4 Super Bowls and been to 6 Super Bowls because of Bill Belichick. My response to that? Well, no dip, Sherlock. Of course. That's how you get a dynasty. You know why Joe Montana went to 4 Super Bowls? There's this guy named Bill Walsh. You know why Bart Starr won a bunch of championships and a pair of Super Bowls? It's this guy they named the Lombardi Trophy after.
Well, I mean, you look at the Steelers of the 70s.
The Steelers, the Cowboys. You pair great quarterbacks.
Even if you had someone like Terry Bradshaw, you still have the Iron Curtain.
Yeah. So, I mean, you combine great coaches, great players, and there's this magical thing that happens called a dynasty. You're welcome for the logic. So
if Pittsburgh can do it, any other team has no excuse.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. You have the Cowboys, the 49ers, the Packers, I guess you can maybe say the Bills almost had a dynasty. They went to three or four Super Bowls. They didn't win any of them, but
I'd say that's an AFC dynasty.
Yeah, and then you have the Patriots, obviously, of the 2000s and going into the 2010s. And, yes, it is because Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, and it's one of those things people try and say. There's my phone going off. People try and...
It's a delayed Patriots ding.
Ding.
Finally got it working.
Yes.
It only takes 5 minutes to register, but... You were saying.
Now I've forgotten what I was saying. Yeah, so people try and say, oh, Tom Brady's making Bill Belichick look good. Oh, Bill Belichick's making Tom Brady look good. It's both ways. Bill Belichick's one of the greatest coaches of all times. You could say he is the greatest coach of all time. There's that argument. And then, you know, Tom Brady's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. There's a reason they've been to 6 Super Bowls, and guys like Peyton Manning only went to 2. Or he went to 3. He only won 2. But the argument that I see so many people, and I saw this argument a lot when people were saying, who's better, Peyton or Brady? And they say, well, what happened in 2008 when Tom Brady went down? Well, they went 11-5. And what happened when Peyton went down in 2010, 2011? I can't remember exactly which year. The Colts went 2-14. And so they say, of course, well, Peyton must have been better because their team tanked. And...
But why would you want to rely on
one
dude?
And the thing is, it was the way the teams were set up. So this is my counter-argument. So in 2007, first off, the 2007 to like 2009, that team was one of the better constructed Patriots teams throughout this dynasty. 2007, they went 16-0. And the next year, with virtually the same team, Matt Castle went 11-5. So already you're saying, okay, that's a 5-game swing, by the way. That's the difference between... getting a top 5 pick in the draft and borderline playoffs. And you also look, Tom Brady in 2007, he threw for almost 5,000 yards. He had 50 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, 68.9 completion percentage, 8.3 yards per attempt. Matt Castle, almost 3,700 yards, 21 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, 7.2 yards an attempt. You want to tell me Tom Brady's a system quarterback with that difference? It's ridiculous. And again, I'm going on a rant. But Tom Brady's not a system quarterback, I promise. If you just open your eyes and watch, because you can determine a lot by a quarterback by just watching him. You don't necessarily have to be a genius in film to look at a quarterback and see how good he is. I can look at Kent Myers and watch him throw. I can say, Kent Myers probably isn't an NFL quarterback. In fact, I'm just going to say he's not an NFL quarterback for a number of reasons. He's a good college quarterback, but he's not going to be a great NFL quarterback unless something really changes soon. And you look at guys, you can see it. Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, all these guys. You can see it, the way they throw the ball, the way they manage their teams. They're elite quarterbacks. You can see it. And Tom Brady has that.
Yeah. I do wonder, though, because obviously he's never been anywhere else, you know? We haven't ever seen him sort of out of the New England element, so to speak. Which, not to say, like, he's nothing without the Patriots. But I do wonder how, whether his numbers would be the same on another team. Because, I mean, you know, you do need that quarterback protection. You do need those guys open and fast enough to get open. So maybe he's not an entirely system, you know, he's not a system quarterback per se. But you got to wonder how much of that success also requires everybody else. Because, I mean, yeah, we did see Peyton Manning switch teams, and he led both teams he played for to Super Bowl wins.
Yeah.
But those were, you know, those were kind of spread out in years. Those took a while to build. And so, obviously, no question, Tom Brady's an elite quarterback and Hall of Famer already, should be and will be. But I wonder what the numbers would be given a different environment for him.
Yeah, so you make a really fair point. And this is something that nobody really wants to talk about, is what would happen to good quarterbacks if they went to crappy teams. And one of my examples I would like to kind of look back on is Steve Young. Mm-hmm. Steve Young, his first 2 years in the NFL as opposed to the, was it the, that random, when he played for the Express, the LA Express.
Oh, the,
I think it was
the USFL?
Yeah, the USFL. I was thinking like, NSFL or something like that, some random acronym. But in Tampa Bay in 1986, his team went 2-12. Crappy team. Mm. He only played in 14 games. So you can't quite look at the totals and examine them, but you can look at his completion percentage, 53.7. Mm. And it's just holy cow. Yards per game, 163. That's bad, even for the time, because now it's much more inflated. But then you go to his days in San Francisco, his best days in San Francisco, he's hitting the upper 60s in completion percentage. He's hitting the mid to upper 200s in passing yards. He's getting in the mid to high 20s in touchdown passes and just ridiculous stuff and throwing fewer interceptions than touchdowns, whereas in 1986 he threw 13 interceptions to 8 touchdowns. Again, only 14 games. And keep in mind, 14 games he threw 8 touchdown passes. So in Tampa Bay, on a crappy team, this is Hall of Fame quarterback Steve Young. Hall of Fame, the guy who ended his career with one of the best career passer ratings. I think at the time it was the best. On a crappy team, he was a bench warmer, and he got traded to San Francisco to be a backup, albeit to Joe Montana. But Bill Walsh helped him become a Hall of Fame quarterback because he got put into a system. And so this is one of the things I feel like there are quarterbacks who would have been Hall of Famers had they been in a good system. And I look at a quarterback like Tom Brady, I do wonder what would have happened if he had been on not New England Patriots. Yeah. Now, I believe that he is a hard enough worker, he would have been good. Yeah. Six Super Bowl appearances, 4 wins, good? That's very debatable.
I think that would take a little bit more pieces than just
him. And he might have been that good, but not with the same results.
Yeah.
But I also look at Russell Wilson. He went to the Seahawks. Would Russell Wilson be what he is today if he'd been drafted by the Jaguars? Heck no. You have to be in a good enough position. A lot of guys, when you look at them getting drafted number one, I feel like a lot of times some of them become busts because they're just never in a position to be successful. You see some that are exceptions. Peyton Manning and Cam Newton are two that come to my mind who've been successful in spite of being high picks. They were able to still succeed because they're able to overcome the fact that their team sucked.
Yeah.
And Andrew Luck is still working to overcome that.
Yeah. But also to kind of, if I may kind of jump back over, Tom Brady, he was also supposed to be sort of the student to Bledsoe.
Mm-hmm.
And he beat him out for the job.
Yep.
I mean, that's obviously before, you know, the really good years there in New England happened. But still, you know, you look at a young quarterback able to kind of outwork an established veteran. I think he could have done a lot at another place. So, I don't think he's a product of the system.
He's a product of hard work and some good luck.
Yeah.
And that's really what a lot of it comes to with some quarterbacks. Yeah. You know, Colin Kaepernick, he was a product of good luck, and then he didn't work hard, and so he lost his job. He was in a similar situation to Tom Brady, but he didn't work hard enough, and so he's not a future Hall of Famer, yeah. Or at least a Pro Bowler. But anyway, that's enough of my rant on the New England Patriots. Ding!
We've seen enough different angles that I think we almost have like a little essay here we could publish.
Yeah, just almost.
Maybe one day. Sourced, ESPN.
ESPN cited.
There you go, professor. There's my project.
Yeah, the problem is the only people who are saying Tom Brady is the system quarterback are Twitter trolls. Because anybody who's smart, except one guy in Bleacher Report. But he used the same stupid articles. I almost swore right there. Dumbass articles.
Dumbass.
Some guy in Bleacher Report said Tom Brady was the most overrated quarterback, and he used the...
I'm not a Patriots fan, but whoa there, you know.
He used the Matt Castle argument, which is what I call it, which is a stupid argument.
The Matt Castle theorem.
Yeah, I think we can literally give that a name now. That is the Matt Castle theorem.
My life's work.
It's almost as bad as Spygate and Deflategate. Anyway, so we're going to move on. We're going to stay in the NFL. And unfortunately, oh, crap. I forgot this. It's going to include the Patriots again.
Ding.
But we're not going to talk about them for long because
see, if we get at least five mentions in the seventh inning, everyone gets free Dunkin' Donuts the day after the game. So come on. Let's keep saying it.
If you hate me, you can tweet me on Twitter at the JBox67. You can say, please stop mentioning the Patriots. I absolutely hate them. And I promise if you tweet me, I will not mention them in the next podcast. Unless something really cool happens or really bad happens. If another scandal comes out, I'll talk about it.
Or we just feel like it.
Yeah, or we just feel like it.
It's our show, dang it. It's his show, dang it.
I can do what I want. Anyway, so there are five undefeated teams in the NFL so far. Can you name them all? I can't because they're right in front of me and I'm cheating, but.
I know there's the Vikings.
Yep, there's one.
That may be it. Carolina, they lost, right? So they're no longer.
Yeah, so there's three in the AFC and two in the NFC.
Well, AFC Patriots, right?
Yeah, the Patriots. You got the Vikings already.
Not the Bengals, right?
No, not the Bengals. Okay. I'll give you one. There's the Broncos.
Broncos, that's right. I can't. That's
Carson Wentz. Eagles.
Eagles. Wow.
Okay, and you'll never guess the fifth one. Just take a wild guess. You'll never guess who it is.
Probably not the Rams.
You were close though.
Really?
The Ravens.
Ravens.
The Ravens are undefeated. Okay, so here I wanted to rank the top five undefeated teams. And for me, it's pretty straightforward. There's some debate kind of in the top three where you might want to place them. But here are my rankings. First off, the Patriots. Moving on, the Broncos. And then because you have the Vikings, the Eagles, and the Ravens. And so here's kind of my reasoning behind this. I've already talked enough about the Patriots. So the Broncos, their defense is still awesome. They're doing really well. Trevor Siemian, he had a really good week last week. He hasn't shown too many signs of being not very good. Through 2 weeks, he had more interceptions than touchdowns, but he was doing well enough. And the running game is good. Their offense seems better than it was last year. And that always sounds weird when I think about it, because Peyton Manning was leading last year's offense for at least part of it, and it was awful. The quarterback play was awful. And it's hard to think of Peyton Manning that way. But this year, the offense is doing well, the defense is awesome, and so, of course, they're going to be one of the best teams, and they're undefeated. The Vikings, this has to be the surprise team because I heard a guy preseason, he was saying he was really high on the Vikings. He thought they could be an NFC contender, and I was like, psh, no, they're not. Adrian Peterson's good, but he's not that good. And they have Teddy Bridgewater as quarterback. Well, minus Teddy Bridgewater, minus Adrian Peterson, yes, he played the first two games, but he did diddly jack in those two games.
Because he's coming back. He was coming back from an injury anyway.
Yeah. And they're 3-0. And not only are they 3-0, they've beaten the Packers and the Panthers.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that?
Yeah, and because, like, I mostly agree with your rankings, the way you've got it set up. But for the reasons you've stated, plus the fact that dealing with a quarterback situation, I would put them up. I don't know. Just for the element of surprise, I would put them at maybe number two. Just for the fact that nobody – I mean, they've been on the upswing, and I think a lot of people see that they've been on the upswing, especially for beating out the Packers last year to take their division. But, you know, Sam Bradford came in short notice, really. I mean, he did not spend the whole summer with them. You know, Bridgewater, I think he'll come back and he'll do really well. I just think it's just
I wonder if Terry Bridgewater is going to come back at all the way Bradford's playing.
Yeah, I mean, I think there'll at least be a battle for QB when he does get healthy.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think just for the fact that you lose so many crucial pieces, and Adrian Peterson was, when he's healthy, a very crucial piece, and he's been a franchise player for, obviously, Minnesota. So I'd say solely based on this element of surprise, I would maybe put them after the Patriots.
Yeah, that is – one of the arguments I was having with myself with these rankings is Broncos or Vikings at number two.
Yeah.
And I settled on the Broncos, but I can see why you put the Vikings at number two, because I feel like they're basically on the same level right now, especially with how good the Vikings defense is, how good the Broncos defense is. The Vikings are essentially the Broncos of the NFC.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I think for them, for the Vikings, you know, this season seems to be just theirs to lose. I mean, with the way they're playing, you know, and it could be interesting in the coming years just on them, not to go on too much about them, but to see them maybe just kind of sort of edge out the Packers and over the next few years and make it a totally different NFC North division would be really fun to watch. Because I think also, I mean, obviously, they still have a lot of work to do, but with the Lions kind of trying to get back up.
Yeah, they kind of took a dip after those couple good years.
Yeah. So then other than my Bears, it would actually be a really good, really fun division to watch again. But
There's a couple years where that division was good, when the Lions were actually good with Matt Stafford and Calvin Johnson and all that. But yeah, I do like that the Vikings are competitive. I've generally had a soft spot for the Vikings. My dad was a Vikings fan once upon a time, back in the day, and Fran Torkin tore his heart out because he lost three Super Bowls. But next, going down to the Eagles, this is another surprise team. I never thought they'd be 3-0.
I picked them last week. I picked them to lose to the Steelers.
Yeah, I think everybody did.
And even on my other show, Ethan got on my case about, you know, because I was like, oh, it'll be maybe a close one, but I think the Steelers will win out. And he got on my case saying there should be, you know, no discussion that the Steelers were going to win the Battle of Pennsylvania. And I thought, okay, maybe I just made a dumb reasoning here, but that was a big game.
Yeah,
it against was. The Steelers.
And Pittsburgh just frankly got outplayed, and I don't think it's an indication of –
well, they don't suck.
I mean, yeah, the Steelers don't suck. I think it's just that one game. Every team is going to lose 3-4, even the best teams, I should say, will lose
Eagles,
3-4
though.
Games. Yeah,
the Eagles. I mean, is, you know,
I think
somehow surprising when normally to be a Philly fan in anything is to be heartbroken perpetually.
Yeah,
anything. You know,
but a lot of people are really surprised by Carson Wentz. There are a lot of people who are very positive and praising Carson Wentz. And so I have almost poured over watching these YouTube videos of, you know, every Carson Wentz throw. You can look up for a lot of quarterbacks, every so-and-so's throw in week two or something like that. And so I've watched a lot, and I'm trying to just analyze. So I'm using that, you know, sit back and just try and watch and see what he's doing. And, you know, he's not on the same level, and this is going to be an obvious dumb statement, but he's not Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger. But he's good. He overthrows guys. He throws, you know, some incomplete passes that you'd like to see completed, but he doesn't throw inaccurate passes. His passes are generally accurate. He does throw a lot of short passes, but so does Tom Brady. And he looks good. Obviously, he's not on the status of a lead quarterback. You wouldn't expect him to be. He's a rookie. And so I can agree with a lot of guys who are saying, I've never seen a rookie play like this. Well, neither have I. The only guy, I feel like Jimmy Garoppolo was playing at a similar and perhaps better. We talked about this last week. I thought Jimmy Garoppolo was better. But Jimmy Garoppolo, this is his third year in the league. And he plays for the New England Patriots. And so you'd dang it. I did it again.
We're almost to free Dunkin' Donuts, everyone. We're almost there.
Almost. Is there even a Dunkin' Donuts around here?
I don't think so.
That is a...
But I won't tell your listening audience that.
Krispy Kreme Donuts. There might be one of those in here. So, I am impressed with Carson Wentz. Obviously, he has a long way to go as a quarterback. But again, he's a rookie, and so I'm not trying to downplay Carson Wentz at all.
Yeah. But already, though, close to 800 yards of passing.
And he, I,
you know,
like
that's,
I said,
pretty good.
He looks good. And now the argument the first 2 weeks was, well, he played the Browns and the Bears. Okay, he just beat the Steelers. Okay, shut up. Yeah.
Plus, he is a rookie. You know, yeah, I mean, that's
it, yeah, and this
it,
all, this all,
it always takes some adjusting. Even just great guys in college aren't necessarily great in the NFL, and so there's that learning curve. And even with,
and he's ahead of that learning
curve.
Yeah,
I mean, you could, so someone could say, well, they played the Browns and the Bears. As much as it pains me to agree sometimes with that sentiment, but still. I think the Eagles surprised even Philly fans, you know?
Definitely. Like, who thought the Eagles would be 3-0?
They're used to just, at least in recent years, just awful play, and they've got an undefeated team on their end. So I don't even think they were looking at it, you know, as this is what it was going to be like.
Yeah. So congrats to Philly.
Yeah.
I also have a somewhat soft spot for Philly. Damn. I didn't for a couple of years when Michael Vick was – and it wasn't because of Michael Vick. It was because people thought he was supposed to be the MVP, and I didn't think he was that good. But I do like the Eagles.
Yeah.
And then the fifth team, the team that I could go out in the street and ask people who the undefeated teams are, and nobody except any Ravens fan, maybe a Steelers fan who hates the Ravens, would know that the Ravens are 3-0.
Yeah.
Now, and I had this written down. You know who the Eagles or the Ravens have played?
Jaguars, I know.
Yep. 0-3 team.
They would have played another AFC East team, right?
So no. Like, well, yes, they would have. Okay, so they've played the
Bills. I think it was Bills.
They played the Bills. They won 13-7 against the Bills week one. They then played the Browns in week two. Came back from 20 point deficit to the Browns.
Jeez, Cleveland.
Another 0-3.
At least
team.
They have basketball. Sorry. At least they have basketball now.
King James.
So there's something to look forward to.
Yeah. And then the Jaguars.
Anyway, yeah.
Their opponents have a combined record of, well, one win. How many losses would that be? 8-1-8.
Yeah.
Two 0-3 teams, a 1-2 team. The Bills really should have been 0-3, but we'll talk about what happened in a minute when we talk about the NFC. But the Ravens, they're about to have a tougher schedule. I think they actually got a couple more weeks where they've got a couple more easy opponents. I don't have their schedule pulled up.
They are playing, I think next they're playing an up-and-coming Raiders team. So Raiders obviously not...
Yeah, they
not
are playing
title better. Contenders, but they are a young team that is playing well in a pretty good AFC West. So
they're better than the Browns and the Bills and the Jaguars. So, yeah, they're playing the Raiders, then they're playing the Redskins, the Giants, and then it gets a little tougher. Well, actually, the Giants are good, and I guess who are the Redskins? Then they have the Jets, the Steelers, the Browns again, the Cowboys, Bengals. Their schedule actually looks pretty easy this
it's
year.
It's not bad.
Except
that November stretch doesn't look too bad at this point.
Yeah, so It's not that bad for them.
You know what I... You know, they'll play Philly later on in December. That'll be...
Yeah, that'll be
interesting if both teams are still as good as they are now. Maybe not undefeated.
I wouldn't say the Ravens are good now. They've won by an average of 4.5 points.
Any way you win.
I guess that's true. But against this crappy schedule, they win by four, they won by 6 against the Bills, 5 against the Browns, and by how many win they by the Jaguars? It was like 2 or 3.
Wouldn't it just be fantastic though? They keep winning like that, like in really crappy ways, but they just keep winning, and they're like heading toward the playoffs with these awful wins.
And they could do that. Their schedule looks easy. I mean, the hardest.
The more fans don't feel like they can really celebrate because they don't feel they've earned it the way they've been winning.
Yeah. I mean, the toughest teams they play, you have the Patriots late in the year, the Steelers a couple of times, and the Bengals once.
That could be after the fact, though, by the time you get there, the last 4 games of the season.
Yeah, you might have the Steelers sitting guys because they've already secured a 1 or 2 seed.
Yeah.
But anyway.
They just keep winning by like that, really awful ways.
And I would just laugh, but I can't stand Ravens fans sometimes. But I don't like the Ravens because they were rivals with a certain unnamed team for a few years as we kept facing each other in the AFC title game.
The hand holding the hammer wants to hit that bell, but I'm holding it back.
You can't do it. All right. So moving on, we're going to stay in the NFC. So, my projection going into the season was that the NFC was going to feature this dogfight, this epic dogfight. And no puns, even though I've already mentioned Michael Vick. There was the Seahawks, the Packers, the Cardinals, and the Panthers. Now, I was more high on the Cardinals and the Panthers than I was on the Seahawks and Packers.
Yeah.
I wasn't very high on the Seahawks, and now I'm even less on the Seahawks. But those teams have a combined record of 6-6. There's 2 2-1 teams and 2 1-2 teams. That was a lot of twos in there.
But
The Seahawks, it was the Cardinals and the Panthers are both 1-2.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and Seahawks are in same record, but
and then they haven't been very impressive.
In second place for because of point differentials.
And they also lost the game. The Rams.
With the Rams.
The Rams are in first place in the division.
It took, 3 weeks to get a touchdown?
Yeah, that is the most embarrassing.
And they're 2-1 at the top of the AFC West.
Yeah, you saw how much we made fun of the Rams after they lost 20-0. They get the last laugh. Well, the third laugh, I guess, since it's week 3.
9-3. You shouldn't even celebrate winning 9-3 on all field goals.
Well... you win.
Yeah, true. They're taking the Ravens method of just do anything legal or not to win this game, fellas. They're playing like they, have a bookie they have to pay off. I mean, that's how they're playing, because any way to win.
Scrappy.
Maybe even some point shaving for some extra cash.
That was the 49ers game.
Yeah, that was they're both.
They all bet the 49ers would win, and they just lay down so they can... make some money.
Take home some cash. Yeah, this NFC is wild.
And so the Cardinals, my line for the Cardinals this week, and I actually posted an article I have online for powerrankingsandmore.com, but it was, will the real Arizona Cardinals please stand up?
Yeah.
Because week 1, they kind of laid a bit of an egg against the Patriots, and again, no pun intended there. Week 2, they absolutely crushed the Buccaneers, and I thought, okay, they are back. The Cardinals are back. Week 3, they played the Bills.
Yeah, and lost.
The one-dimensional offense Bills, albeit, yes, the run game is great.
I thought I at least knew enough. I mean, I'm not an expert on the NFL, but I think I at least knew enough to make good pigskin picks. Apparently not with my NFC.
Yeah.
Choices here.
The only people who picked the Bills for these backwoods hillbillies thought, oh, the Bills, I like the Bills, they're gonna win, and they were right, I guess.
Or Back to the Future Biff found the the record book, and he's been betting.
He's like, yes, the Bills totally win. I'll make $1 million. And you would have made $1 million if you'd bet that. Yeah. You bet anything on the Bills winning that game.
It's just like you look at the standings. I mean, you've got an Eagles team at the top of the NFC East, which I would not have guessed. I mean, obviously.
Well, anybody could be atop of the NFC East in any given week, in any given year for the past 5 years.
Yeah, but still, I mean, an undefeated team winning against a pretty good, I mean, as we talked about just a little while ago, a pretty, you know, you can't, don't count the Steelers out, but.
Yeah, they're going to be at the top of the AFC still. It's them, the Broncos, and.
And then you have.
That one team.
The Vikings, looking like they're the new sheriff in town in the NFC North, which I think is a welcome development, not just because I hate the Packers, but just anybody, like why the Lions.
Why do you hate the Packers again?
Because I love the Bears.
Oh, that's yes. Why. Okay. That
so just everything. Any, even the Lions, I was like, heck, why not just somebody else? But yeah, so Minnesota, ever since they took the division last year, they've been good. A Carolina team in third place in the NFC South.
Yeah, and I will say this. They've lost to the Vikings, obviously a good team, and the Broncos. Yeah, so nobody should be bailing out on the Panthers yet.
It's still early, obviously.
Yeah, and their two good losses have been, you hate to say the word good losses, because that just seemed like a contradiction in every sense of the terms, but you've lost to two teams that are really good.
But
the two of the undefeated teams that are guys they've lost to.
Yeah, but I thought, because I picked them over the Vikings. I mean, just I thought.
Well, so did most people.
You know, so I think they should have at least, they should have been at least 2-1 at this point. But, you know, second, just third place. Nah, I didn't think that.
Yeah, and again, this is only week 3. By the time we get to week 10, things would really have evened out, because.
We hope so.
Yeah, we hope so. If the Panthers are still below 500 by week 10, something's gone
wrong. If everything is still the way it is by week 10, I will have lost all faith and reason.
All faith and reason.
to understand the NFL.
Everything's going wrong. Babies are falling from the sky. Isn't there some quote about that? Something's it's raining cats and dogs or
cats and dogs, I've heard that.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like there's some random movie quote where somebody's going crazy and he's saying this something's falling from the sky. And anyway, this guy is falling in the NFL through 3 weeks. Nobody expected the Brady-less team to go 3-0.
Yeah.
Or the Eagles to be 3-0, or the Ravens, or the Vikings. I guess some people might have said the Broncos, but and nobody expected the Cardinals and Panthers to be 1-2. The Panthers have already lost more games this regular season than they did all of last regular season, and we're through 3 games.
And it's already early.
Yeah. But like I said, any given Sunday, that's the great thing about the NFL, and we've seen that, especially with the Bills and the Cardinals.
I just wonder if every NFC division is turning into the NFC East. Hopefully maybe. Not, but that would make it a lot more interesting.
Yeah, because some of the AFC divisions, they're good. The AFC East is almost over and done with already.
That was quick.
Yeah, quicker than normal. And nobody expected
thanks
it to
a
be
lot, Jets.
I expected the Jets to be good this year, and I didn't like saying that, but I thought they would be good.
I thought they would have been like 2-1 by now.
Yeah, and I was thinking they were going to go like 10-6 this year, the way they did last year, or similar, 9-7, 11-5 even, 12-4 at the most.
Yeah, but.
And they suck.
Bengals already under my expectations.
Yeah.
Just for this point. They look like they were doing really well.
Yeah, there's the three teams that I feel are going to be competing for the wild card spots, the Chiefs, the Jets, and the Bengals. All three of those teams seem to be struggling a little bit.
Yeah.
I think the Chiefs seem to be in the best situation, though.
Oh, yeah. Of all the teams that aren't division leaders at this point, I would say I like the Chiefs best in the AFC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's about all we got here. We spent a lot of time on the NFL. We mentioned the New England Patriots way too many times.
Ding!
I apologize to everyone who hates the New England Patriots. I've met a lot of you, and I feel bad that I'm a Patriots fan. But in 10 years, when the Patriots suck, then you'll have your revenge on me. You know, when Tom Brady's retired and so is Bill Belichick, you'll be making fun of me because my team sucks, but I'll still be a Patriots fan. So don't call me a bandwagon fan. Oh, yeah. But again, you can tweet me at the
still has his Bledsoe jersey, might I add.
I do not have a Drew Bledsoe jersey. I have a Rob Gronkowski jersey and a Tom Brady jersey. And I wanted to get a Vince Wilfork jersey, but he left. Well, really got either traded or cut or something. Broke my heart.
Yeah.
Vince Wilfork's like my favorite New England Patriots player that's not named Tom Brady, and it's even debatable that I love him more. And he plays for the Texans now. But again, you can tweet me at thejbox67. I'm going to be getting a Twitter handle for this show pretty quickly. It's actually already created, but it's not quite active yet. I haven't done a whole lot of stuff, and I've even got a Facebook page. And so we're really going to be on social media, so you can tweet me again at thejbox67. If you really hate the New England Patriots and want me to stop talking about them, tweet me. Heck, follow me and keep tweeting me.
Or come on the show. Let's have a discussion about the Patriots.
Yeah, you can even come on the show. If you talk to me and say, hey, I really want to be on your show one week, feel free. We're open to anything. But again, thank you so much, and we're signing off. See ya.